Namaste, good morning, everyone. I was recently in a holy town called Badrinath, which is connected to Lord Vishnu, who is the sustainer, the all-pervasive one in the Hindu trinity of Shiva, Vishnu and Brahma, Brahma being the creator. And while walking around the temple, I was quite surprised to see a gigantic portrait of a Nath yogi, Raja Sundarnath. It was next to a portrait of Adi Shankara in a surprisingly quiet corner of this very crowded temple. And I recalled one story of this great Nath yogi in a book which we had published. And in that story, a legend, you may call it, Raja Sundarnath was sitting in meditation, deep samadhi. If you Google his name, you might find this photograph. That is the one I saw actually, where his head is slightly at an angle down and his jatas, matted hairlocks are draping down. So the story goes that some young boys saw this yogi in deep meditation. And so they decided to have some fun. And they took a piece of burning coal, came up to him quietly, placed it on his thigh and ran away. And to their surprise, the yogi didn't flinch and the coal went deep into the thigh. And finally, he came out of his samadhi, Raja Sundarnath, and he saw what had happened. And he was quite impressed because he felt that this has been a test of how deep my samadhi is, and I'm quite pleased with myself. And then the legend goes that he granted these boys boons. Because if this had not happened, he would not have realized himself the level of his yogic attainment. Now, this is not about us going into samadhi and not reacting and so on and so forth. Because we are talking of daily living. With this fact that we ourselves are conditioned in a certain way to react and to respond. But you see, one great thing happens when the concept of non-doership gets uprooted. There is a turning within. So while a reaction may get triggered based on our conditioning, the understanding comes down like a swift sword and cuts off any involvement. Any involvement in blaming, condemning, hating, judging, and so on and so forth. And so the relationship is now seen in a different light. We do not view others as antagonists. They may still play that role. Buttons may be pushed. That is a part of the happening. But this involvement in the duration of horizontal time is what drops away. So you are in a space where you are very open to meeting with the other once again and seeing what flows. So many of us feel like hot coals are placed on us every day by people. The point is, when we accept people for the way they are, the way God made them, as Joel Goldsmith would say, then our relationship is no longer with people but with God. There will still be people we don't get along with. This does not mean we will embrace everyone, be in love with the world, and so on and so forth. Because we all are built a certain way. We all have our even preferences when it comes to people. But with this understanding operating in the background, everyone is an instrument through whom God's will functions. Our relationship is with God. And when we are at peace, we are with God. Someone sent me a note that, why do you talk about relationships all the time? The answer is quite simple. On the mundane level, daily living is about relationships. Unless we are like Raja Sundarnath up in the Himalayas in isolation. And at one could say a deeper level, all relationships are a reflection of our relationship with our self. As the cliche goes, not just relationships with people, relationship, one's relationship with what happens in one's life, one's relationship with what the next moment may bring, pleasure or pain. What is our relationship with that? How are we related to the happenings in our life? How are we related to the content of our consciousness? What is the content of our consciousness? What is the story of my life going on within my mind from morning to night? What is the basis of it? You will find that when there is an acceptance of God's will, whether you like it or not, a lot of time God's will brings pain. But when you accept this is God's will, that pain does not become psychological suffering, which is in conflict with what has arisen in consciousness. A happening happens, which is totally beyond our control. It just happens. It comes into our field of consciousness, so to speak. For example, let's say you look up into the sky and you see a plane. That plane passing by has become the content of your consciousness. A plane which is flying over Iceland is not a part of your consciousness right now. Where did that plane come from, which is the content of your consciousness at the moment it is seen? As Goldsmith would say, it comes from the infinite invisible. The mind says, oh, it took off from here, it flew across the sky, I was here, so on and so forth. But there was this vision, there was this field of consciousness, and an image appeared. Image disappeared. Something else appeared, disappeared. Someone I like appeared, someone I don't like appeared, both disappeared. But when we create these hooks of stories around what is the content of our consciousness and try to pull them back, pull that plane back into my vision, that relationship back, and so on and so forth. That is the me with its sense of doership, which is now trying to control this field. That is why Ramana Maharshi said, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. What remains is the seer, not the seen. I'd like to read out a passage of Goldsmith. When you achieve the demonstration of freedom from within, you will experience it in the without. But be sure that when you invite freedom to come forth, you are also willing to give freedom to those you are holding in bondage. Even if you are holding them in bondage to the belief that they are human beings, give them their freedom. Recognize that nobody is a human being, but that God sits in the midst of every individual, past, present, and future, so-called living, so-called dead, and so-called unborn. You cannot have freedom unless you first give freedom. You cannot have love unless you first give love. You can have only what you are willing to give. What you hold on to, you lose. This is the spiritual law. Quite beautiful. And so, with this understanding, when we free up people from all these concepts we have imprisoned them in, we are truly freeing up ourselves. You see, Goldsmith would point to this fact that I may have mentioned this before, that it is an invisible activity in a seed which becomes an oak tree. That energy, that power, that consciousness, unseen, transforms the seen from a seed to an oak tree. Now, if we look at it from the human perspective, a baby. The invisible activity in the baby transforms the baby into an adult. That life, that invisible life force. But what has happened as part of, as Rameshji would say, the divine hypnosis, and as Goldsmith uses the word hypnosis as well as mesmerism, is that at a certain age, the ego develops in this baby where it considers itself separate from the other, from its parents as well. I cry and my mother comes running. Without this ego, there was pure being. The baby cried and the mother came running. But now the baby knows, if I cry, the mother comes running. This creation of the ego is a part of Maya. And this ego, with the foundation of conditioning, starts developing fear. Fear of the other. Fear of what may happen in life. Fear of survival. The same energy in the baby was completely unconcerned prior to the development of the ego. The trust, there was not even a trust in life. Life was trust itself. There was no concern. Now the concern has stepped in. Identification with name and form, that concern has stepped in, and now it is a battle for survival and for control. And therefore, the basic polaric opposite of me and the other becomes me versus the other. Now, as Rameshji would point out, if a sage or wise man tells someone, kill the ego, the fact is, if I didn't create the ego, how could I kill it? So this results in a lot of struggle and confusion. And therefore, he drew this distinction that even if kill the ego is mentioned, what it implies is the doership in the ego, the sense of doership. And so this teaching works with the ego, makes it understand itself better. How does it operate? What has developed, which has distorted the picture? How does that vision heal back? So it kind of takes the ego by the hand. Without the ego realizing that it is going to dissolve. For some, it's a gentle process of understanding. For some, it happens suddenly. This new vision comes in. So the ego is truly not one's enemy, because we are still then living in this world of opposites, as Goldsmith says. So you will find that in your daily living, when you have this understanding of the pairs of opposites, how they operate, how they are the structure of duality. For example, right and wrong. The pairs of opposites. Now, supposing you have a discussion with someone and you feel your view is the right view, fair enough. We have to, after all, reach conclusions for ourselves. And you may feel the other's view is wrong. But now the understanding is that the other is entitled to their view, you see, just as you are entitled to yours. So you may try to convince the other by all means. That's also part, if it's part of your makeup nature, no problem. But you won't do it beyond a point. You won't inflict violence in word, so to speak, to force someone to see your point of view. You will accept that this is a magnificent world. So many different beings have their own views. In this case, our views don't tally. I feel mine is right, but this other person may feel theirs is right. I may or may not be able to convince them, but I'll go on to the next happening in life. I won't get stuck. I won't get stuck between the pairs of opposites. And so when I don't get stuck between the pairs of opposites, I have, to use Goldsmith's words, risen above the pair of opposites. Or in other words, I have accepted the basic duality of life as the structure of life. I am no longer fighting with it. My pendulum no longer swings between right and wrong. It finds a middle ground. Buddha's middle path is this. Whereas we tend to murder our relationships when people don't agree with us or have differing points of view. On the subject of murder, this word which came up, I'm reminded of what Rameshji would say, that a murder happens, let's suppose, and there are four possible outcomes. That the murderer is caught and punished. Another possible outcome is that the murderer is caught, but because of lack of evidence, he or she is allowed to go scot-free. A third possibility is that the police have not been able to find the murderer and the case remains unsolved. And the fourth possibility is that the wrong person is convicted for the crime. This is a fact. Now, which of these four possibilities happens is God's will. Can we accept that? It's certainly not our will. Our will would be that let the murderer be found, caught, tried, and punished. Doesn't happen all the time. And when Rameshji was asked, can a murderer be enlightened? His answer was, anyone can be enlightened. But the reason it is not likely is because most murders have the sense of doership associated with them, either for the other or oneself. Yet we might have the rare Valmiki, for example. Even that can happen. But the whole point is we cannot control outcomes to the best of our intentions. All right. If anyone would like to share something, ask something, they are welcome to do so now. Someone has been sending me messages about being very anxious, a lot of anxiety arising of about something. And one thing which I'd like to mention here is this teaching, this perspective on life and living is not a substitute for therapy. So if there is a feeling that all your troubles will go away, disappear, whatever it be, that can happen only if it is God's will. But if you are having sleepless nights about various issues, etc., 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 and so on, yes, if you find that you are drawn to the teaching and there is a degree of peace and comfort found in it, and you find tangible evidence in your daily living that there has been a change, then that's a beautiful testament to the teaching in operation. But if you find anxiety levels increasing, and if you find you're not getting answers, because the males are asking me to recommend enlightened gurus to solve this conundrum, it may not be the answer. Yes, Abhishek.
Good morning, Gautam sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Good. So, I just would like to share one personal experience. It's like my father passed away last month.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. He was ailing, I remember. He had cancer.
Yes. So, while he was in ICU, like through this teaching, of course, the perspective changes, and it feels that the smallest thing gets so unnoticed that even the last breath is not in the control. He was not able to, you know, if something was in his control, he would have saved himself, right? So the entire perspective changes. Would you just wanted to like share this? And he passed away in the ICU and with this, you know, oxygen mask on, and still no movement in his body. So if actually in daily activities, we forget these things, of course, this was one realization.
And do you feel that your reaction, one could say, to his passing, or your experience of his passing was in any way impacted through the lens of the teaching, compared with, let's say, prior to the teaching?
Yes, sir. A lot. That's why I would like to extend my gratitude to you and for and Ramesh sir, of course, for their teachings. Because earlier I was quite afraid that what if this happens, and what if, of course, the parent is not there, and what would be the consequences, and how would I feel? But honestly, looking at him, and things just happened. Honestly speaking, things just happened. And at times, even if I cried, there was nothing like I should not cry. I should be strong, as I used to think earlier, that if I had reacted this way, then at this time, one should be strong, right? So what I felt was crying happened for a minute. Honestly speaking, for a minute, then it stopped. And then I was totally fine and doing whatever is necessary to do. And then again, after some time, when still he was there, like, of course, he had passed away already, but his body was there, but still the crying again happened and then again went, you know? So I think if we don't take this ownership of, I should be this way, I should not be that way, the entire thing is everything just passes by. Everything will happen, of course, but it will pass by, of course, after some time. So actually, this teaching helped me a lot. Of course, that doesn't mean that I could have saved my father. Whatever happened had to happen, right? We tried our best. We gave him the best treatment. We gave him the best possible treatment. And I really believe and really, really thank that, you know, at least we were able to give him the treatment. He never said no for the treatment. He was willing for that. We could afford to give him the treatment. So all these things, I think, was just happened. Not really our doing, but it really happened, because many people are such that they don't even get the treatment also. Maybe due to the financial fund, or due to their children are not there, or whatever the reason is. But at least things happened in place. Of course, the cancer was, I think, so now I think it was last stage, which I was not really aware of. I thought he might be saved or something, but that's okay. The point is, nothing is in control. Yet, the doing was happening instead of thinking that I was doing it. So that was really immaterial, whether I was doing it or I should not have done that. The doing was anyhow happening. Yes. And I think that is what you meant by impersonal doing. Is it so?
Yes, absolutely. So there is no question of pride for the doing. I took care of my father, for example. It is exactly that it was meant to be that way. It was one's nature given by God, and that's what happened. You know, Abhishek, I'll tell you something quite the opposite. Someone told me, and I can say that pain arose when I heard this. He was ailing. This man was ailing. And his son is a multi-millionaire. And he didn't put up the money for his father. Even that happens. He did not offer a rupee for the father's treatment. Even that happens. Based on their conditioning.
So wasn't that God's will, sir? It was God's will, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because I felt I should do that, whatever financial necessary. So without thinking that I was doing it, I seriously don't have any pride. And because I think that was meant to happen and the perspective changed. Of course, the pain is there. Of course, it will be there. At moments, it will be there. But then there is an understanding that life goes on. If you remove the sense of doership that he should not have gone, he should be with me, then I think I am thinking based on my will that he should be there with me. But he was suffering a lot. Honestly speaking, he was really suffering. Because it may be easier to say for someone that, that person has gone and it's better. He was suffering a lot. But I am saying for that, saying for my father that he was suffering and whatever best could be done, it was already done.
Yes, I mean, sometimes I jokingly say, I wish God had given us one button on our body, which we could just press when the suffering was too much and we could exit the dream of duality.
Exactly. Even he was there since 2 weeks in the ICU. He couldn't come out of it. 5 days prior to his passing away, doctor used to say that he's very critical and anything can happen anytime, but still 5 days passed. And so whenever it is meant to happen, it will happen. Definitely. That is for sure.
Yes.
That is the personal experience.
Yes. With anything and everything in our life, actually.
Exactly. That is so true. And one more thing, as the teaching says that the doership is not basically done by the individual, right? So what happened is like yesterday, my 3-year-old daughter, so she was just roaming around in the temple, just like roaming around here and there. And there were pieces of grains from which people, you know, build houses and all these things. So accidentally she stepped, she stepped on those grains. And so we said that, why did you do this? You shouldn't have done this.
Exactly.
She didn't have any idea about what she was doing. It was all free that she was enjoying the moment. And then we told her that you should not have done that. Mm-hmm. So if this continues, then eventually she will be thinking that she's doing everything.
That's what happens.
And then teaching comes in and it says that, no, you are not doing it. So is it right, sir? Right?
Absolutely. That's the example I also give, you know, like a child running through a house knocks down an expensive curio and the parent really scolds the child. Why are you careless? Look what you've done. I paid so much for the object. The child has no perspective about doing right or wrong. It was a moment of joy. The child was running and knocked something down, which had a value as assigned by the parent because the parent paid for that. But the child is now accused of doing. You did this, you are a bad boy. That's how the ego gets conditioned. And this conditioning starts becoming a hardened conditioning because then we impose it on others because it's happened to us. So we now do it to others. You did this, you did that, you did this, you did that. That is how this works. And then this teaching comes in as a game changer. that, hey, wait a minute, step back, step back.
So that means, sir, if being a parent, I have come across this teaching of non-doership, and if I gradually tell her that it's non-doership in everything, that means it's that my daughter's destiny, that her doership is not so much, right? That was again not in a, is it? That's a destiny, right?
No. See, don't interfere with the design of life. The parent, after all, needs to guide the child. The parent is the child's guru. But what happens, as Rameshji said most beautifully, one glorious outcome for a parent with this teaching is the parent realizes that all children have their own destiny. And so the parent will not, beyond a point, impose its concept of how this child should be, how the child should grow up to be. That imposition, that force, that control is relaxed a bit. And then the parent sees this child blossom the way God has made this child. Whatever attributes, whatever qualities, interests are given a bigger space to be. The child, the parent's understanding allows the child to be rather than being forced into a vision which the parent has of the child. So there's no question of telling a child about non-doership. It's the child is not going to understand. But the greatest thing to do is to live by example. You see, this is very important and this is missed, Abhishek. The greatest thing is to live by example, because that will be picked up by the child. The mind needn't enter the picture. You know, it's actually common knowledge that what is in your consciousness all the time is what you will vibrate. What is around you, as Goldsmith says, if you are with a man of peace, you will find that the atmosphere is pervasive with peace. And if you find what he calls a man who is really full of negativity, lust, this, that, etc., you will also find yourself being pulled into that without any words being spoken. So to, you see, if you live a teaching, or rather if a teaching is lived by you, you are the shining example of the teaching. And that is all the child needs to be with a parent of understanding. That itself will transform the child.
Yes, sir. And so the last thing, yesterday I finished Confusion No More.
Great.
The kind Ramesh sir explained everything so practically.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is a good book. And for those who are drawn to Rameshji's teaching, Confusion No More clears a lot of misconception about the ego, and you could get that book and read more about it. All right. Thank you, Abhishek. That was a beautiful and candid sharing on your part.
Yes, sir. Thank you to you, sir. Thank you.
Yes, Sumaya.
Good morning, Anout. Good morning, Ji. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is again a big thanking note for you from my heart. It's coming from my heart. And I don't know how to say a big thank from my master who made me Advaita teaching very simple. It's not the listening, Gautam Ji. It's practicing. It's not the listening, the teaching. It is the practicing. And practicing day by day, every day, and what I can say at home, a mantra word of peace in daily living. Peace in daily living. And house is a big Guru Kshetra for me. And in that Guru Kshetra, I am like a calmness. I'm maintaining my calmness that made my life very, very easy. And as you said, when the people comes, when they say their opinion, I say, yes, your point, you are right. Yes, your point, you are right. Yes, both are right. And they immediately look at me. What happened to you? Why are you keeping yourself like that? is there anything wrong with it? No, I said, no. I said, no, no, nothing happened. And then immediately when they talk too much, I use your word, why are you stretching your thinking mind too much? And immediately they look at me, is there anything happened to you? Why are you keeping yourself calm? Then I'm thinking, no, nothing. Okay, okay, you speak. And I say, okay, okay, you speak. Immediately they look at me. You're the one who always speak. And now you said, you ask us to speak to me. And I said, no, no, no. I said, my Guruji. I said, my master, who made my life very, very simple. And calmness that every day I'm maintaining in my life, I don't know how to say thank you to me, to you. And one, the lovely word, you always say that being abide. And push the button, elevator. I remember that elevator. So when somebody pushes the button, immediately I remain calm. No, I should not. So when my mom, she scolds me and immediately she sees me, I'm not reacting anything. She said, what's the use of talking to you? I said, nothing.
Absolutely no use of talking to me.
And today morning also, when she scolds, I said, oh God, Mama, God is talking like this. When immediately she laughed at. When I said, when everything I put it in a God, she laughed at immediately. The moment, you know, I can see the two different faces, the anger and the soft corner. So I can see a lot of changes. I don't know how to say. And all I wish and I pray God to give you a good life and healthy life and keep others happy by your wonderful teachings. I don't know what to say. Thank you, Gautam.
Thank you. Beautiful. You see, that's why it's so important that this teaching's measure is in daily living. Otherwise, there's no point, there's no value of it. I give this classic example of someone attending a Bhagavad Gita class in this city for many and many weeks. And then one day, the person who was teaching the class, there was a dinner, a big dinner hosted by someone, and there was conversation as with all dinner parties. And the teacher of the class was found criticizing so many masters, you see. And so, as you know, Maharaj says to criticize anyone or anything is to criticize the affairs of Brahman. And so this is what happens if a teaching is given purely at a level where it is not impacting daily living. Because A, one has to live by example. And two is, how do you know? The only measure, the only measure, as Rameshji would never get tired of saying, actually, is peace of mind. That is the only yardstick. Are you more at peace? Now, this is not to be taken lightly also, because you see what happens is we all are so chiseled by our past happenings and our conditioning that we tend to repeat patterns, and we look at with helplessness how we are playing out patterns. Earlier, the awareness was not there. Let's say a teaching comes in, the awareness kicks in that this is my behavior, this is my pattern, this is my personality. So sometimes it is actually quite a hard journey of self-discovery. But there's that force which brought in this awareness, you see. Earlier, it was a life of unawareness. Let's say I'm inflicting pain on others because I have accused them of being the doers. Now, something has been brought into my vision where I clearly see that people are doing precisely that which they are programmed for. Yet I get triggered, yet my patterns come to the fore. So it can be very frustrating. But that force, you see, that life in the seed, that invisible force which brought even this understanding, that needs to be trusted. Because what happens is the ego gets very frustrated. I cannot change myself in spite of being absorbed in a particular teaching and so on and so forth. The control mechanism has kicked in again, that I can control the outcome. But that force which brings some people onto the path, that needs to be trusted to do its job. The spiritual ego wants to take control of that as well, and now wants to strive for peace of mind. That won't happen, because peace of mind is the absence of that ego which wants to strive for peace of mind as a doing. So, daily living is the Kurukshetra, as she said. The point is, as Goldsmith says, he keeps picking the words of the Master Jesus, because he was influenced by, as he said, the Gospel of John, resist not evil. He keeps saying this, resist not evil, because it doesn't mean sit back helplessly. Let's not make that mistake. Let's understand what resist not evil means. It means evil being the polaric opposite of good. When we accept that there is only one source, one consciousness, then we do not come into resistance with the will of that source. It may pain us, and then we will do precisely that which we think and feel we should do. But as he says, is if we resist evil, then we make the evil real in the sense that it is apart from God. But when we see that both good and evil come from the same source, we have risen above this pair. This, for him, is the primary pair of opposites. And so we do not resist anything. As the initial pushback, the initial conflict with what is, the result is a sense of objectivity in dealing with the situation, neutrality, and buddhi, as they say. Intellect functions better because there's no knee-jerk reaction to the dynamic. And we find that despite what happens in our life, we are handling situations because of our newfound attitude to life. And our attitude to life is our attitude with the other, whoever the other may be. Would anyone else like to ask something? Else we can sit in silence for a few minutes. You know, it's like this example I read, I think it was in Nochur Venkatraman's book, about if a dog enters a hall of mirrors, it's going to see and barks, it's going to see many dogs barking back at itself. It's pretty much an accurate description of what happens, you see. If you find that your thinking mind is operating less and less, as compared with earlier, which it is bound to be if one is not entertaining thoughts of condemnation, hatred, malice, blame, guilt, envy, and so on and so forth, then that is the true process of dying. The death of the thinking mind. The working mind works in its pristine purity. When a task is to be done, it is done. Knowing that the results are not in one's control. But when we find the thinking mind dying day by day, opinion by opinion, judgment by judgment, we are in that sense getting closer to the peace of deep sleep.